Penguin Random House Audio presents The Way You Make Me Feel, Love in Black and Brown. This is the author, Nina Sharma. To my husband, to my parents, to Afro-Asian solidarity, and anyone at the edge of a feeling. Birthmark. My eldest sister, 10 years older than me, is, as the saying goes, the fairest of them all. What I mean to say is that she's lighter skinned than both my middle sister, 8 years older than me, and myself, baby. 10 shares my mother's milky coloring, while 8 and I veer more towards my father's almond brown. But this is not the explanation my mother provides. It's probably because she was born in England, she says, and leaves it at that. How could this be? I always think. My mother and father are both doctors, and when it comes to the body, they tend to talk with precision. My sick notes for school were embarrassingly scientific. Not just Nina has a cold, but please excuse Nina from soccer, she has been suffering a rhinovirus infection. But when it comes to melanin, or lack thereof, the language of science is drained of its color. We are simply dark or light, golly or gory, born in the U.S. or born in England. England, the suspension of science, this mythical, sunless country. My parents' reminiscences of London and their bohemian Chelsea neighborhood are more often positive, if not star-studded. My mother seeing the Beatles play on a roof, my father encountering Mick Jagger and Tom Jones on his way to work at the hospital, and this child that seemed to carry an entire country on the dermis. Why did you leave? I once asked. Because it was racist, my mother said, so quickly I almost missed it. There's another set of stories that run a parallel track. The England where my mother had one child who passed away from birth complications before 10 was born, where the swinging 60s passed them by as they climbed up the ranks of medicine, where my father got his fondness for both biting British humor and heavy midday drinking, where my mother interrupted her residency to be a first-time mom. These are the shadow stories. They come out quick, if at all. Their stories of America are more raw, glaring, and open wounds, even now. My mother can still picture the bright yellow wallet she could not find when she disembarked at JFK in 1972. She can still feel how tired she was all the time, like I had been beaten. Sometimes the exposure is quite literal, the roof peeling off their moving truck, all their possessions open to the elements. From the shores of Coney Island, they slowly crept inward, first to the Bronx, where 8 was born, a shade browner than the first kid, and then to central New Jersey, to the suburbs. There, in what would become an enduring Indian community, I was born, only to up the brown quotient just a bit more. Atop my ruddy newborn skin lay a big black birthmark. The mark was just above my butt, at the small of my back, the size of a potato or the palm of a hand. I don't remember thinking much of the birthmark as I grew up. I could not even see it unless I looked in some kind of double mirror, which I never made an effort to do. I wasn't a fan of looking in mirrors. But when I was 10 years old, my mother took me to a plastic surgeon, and before I could say general anesthesia, the birthmark was lopped off. All I remember is what came after, the big pad of gauze stuck on my back for weeks like some bulky diaper, and my mom forcing me on the bed, ass up. I cried and writhed as she yanked the stitches out. The surgery never healed properly, leaving a thick keloid in the shape of the number 5. It is purple sometimes, red others. A rupture more than erasure. A color releasing more colors. 20 years later, my mom quips with a sneer and a grin both. Maybe we can cut that off too. When I think of the Hindi words for black and white, Gauli and Gauri, I can't help but think of the accompanying Hindu goddesses. Images of fair-skinned Mahaguri are scattered about the house and family home temple, a statue here, a picture there. Gauli does not hold such a place. My first exposure to her was not through my devout parents, but through Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The horn-headed evil cult leader chanting, "Kali Ma, Kali Ma." And yet, whiteness always seemed more like the big baddie to me. "She's so gory," the auntie would praise. But I always heard gory, heard it like a curse, a brutal thing. The two words have different etymologies. Gory coming from the Germanic gore, meaning dirt. Gauri coming from Sanskrit, shining, bright. It was the paradox of my life, to be told constantly to stay out of the sun, to stay shining, light, and brilliant. To know that under the surface of their comments was not a fear of the sun, but a fear of blackness. It was the paradox of my life to know the racism my parents experienced at the hands of white America, and yet to be saddened by how they desired to be white themselves. It was the paradox of my life to watch with my family black performers on stage and screen, to cheer for black athletes, to benefit from the gains of the civil rights movement, black power, yet to meet their rejection of black people in real life. Too long in the sun and I'd hear, "You have become black," which even then I understood was something to fear. I didn't spend much time heeding this advice. Skin to me was an afterthought, a container for the body that I just wanted to take outside to play. I like to think I grew up to be someone who's not very preoccupied with coloring or appearance overall. I don't have a vanity table, and my makeup bag consists of a blush brush, but nothing to dip it in. But maybe this isn't true. Maybe I gaze more than I know or want to acknowledge. For even now I can see it, more than I can see any other section of my body, that birthmark. And I must have looked at it more than I thought. I can see its deep black hue, a constant, nearly a perfect circle, a still and deep place, a place where all the light goes. In my 20s, I gave the scar a story. A man I was dating asked about it. "I got it at 5 points. That's why it's in the shape of a 5. That's how I joined the 5 points gang." My intention was never to tell a convincing lie. I didn't want to prove any sort of toughness. I was just sick and tired of being asked, "What's that?" I kept the lie up for a few days, even bringing him to a brunch spot called 5 points. After 15 minutes of looking worriedly into his pancakes, he finally asked, "Are you okay to eat here?" He had believed what I thought was a very far-fetched tale. I dumped him soon after that. A year later, I was in New York, lying in bed next to the man I would go on to marry. The man who, based on the color of his skin, my parents were hoping I would not marry. The man who was black, whose skin was the same color as mine. As the morning light poured in, I pried myself out of our tangle of brown limbs and bedding. I got up to go to the bathroom naked, the kind of naked that stretches out all over you like a ball gown. The bathroom door opened to a full-length mirror, and I couldn't help but linger there a bit. "You never asked about my scar." I did a big stretch and arched my back.
"I just assumed it was a tail," he joked.
"It was nothing big, a surgery." I set my hands to my hips and fanned my fingers, sliding them across keloid and skin. "I'm sticking a cattail," he said. "You know, you're the first person who hasn't asked." My fingertips met the top of my butt. "Because," he said, "whatever it was, you survived."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?